and to give to that expression the proper tone and spirit called for by the occasion. Its authority rests on the harmonizing sentiments of the day, whether expressed in conversation, in letters, printed essays, or in the elementary books of public right, as Aristotle, Cicero, Locke, Sidney, etc. In fact, what Jefferson does with this document is incredibly radical. It is, in principle, meant to be a simple state paper to be submitted to the French to prove that we've declared our independence and therefore are a good bet to lend money to and military sources. So it's essentially for foreign consumption. The actual independence had, in fact, been declared 2 days earlier and really had been effectually made real in the previous month when Congress decided to authorize the states to form revolutionary governments. Jefferson takes what would have been a foreign press release and turns it into a founding document by pitching the audience not to the French, but to the American people. In fact, the literary historian Jay Fliegelman has argued quite cogently recently that the document was meant to be read aloud, that the early transcription of it has these strange notations, which people thought were originally odd punctuation marks. They are, in fact, cues for reading the document. It was meant to be read in the classical pose of the time, legs spread shoulder length apart, the right hand extended forward in sincerity, the left hand on the heart. Jefferson's mastery is exposed at the very outset. Usually a document like this, a declaration, would have three parts: a brief preamble, a list of grievances, which would be the bulk of the document, and then a statement of the actual Declaration of Independence. Jefferson changes the strategy. The preamble becomes the central part of the document. And there we see his remarkable skill at combining disparate and eclectic sources. I want to look at the famous second paragraph. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." Stirring rhetoric. It's also actually a fascinating passage, that trinity of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Because this is what Jefferson is doing. For the longest time, historians looked at those three and said, that's straight Locke, right? It's a Lockean social contract, Lockean principles. But Locke had a slightly different phraseology. Locke had been life, liberty, and property. Now, you can read that as Lockean, because happiness is at the private level, what interest is at the public level, and the root of interest is itself property. So if you want to read this as a Lockean document, you can. But you don't have to. You can read it another way. Jefferson read Francis Hutcheson, who was a disciple of Locke's and Shaftesbury's. Hutcheson had used the phrase life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And for Hutcheson, happiness was not individual, but social and communal. Therefore, instead of Lockean individualism, we have a sort of libertarian democratic communalism, if we want to read it that way. There's also another way to read it. A third figure, Adam Ferguson, a member of the Scottish Enlightenment, who Jefferson read, had written a book called A History of Civil Society. In there, he uses that same phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But the pursuit of happiness is neither utility, interest, or property. It's instead virtue, the sort of virtue associated with Renaissance and classical civic humanism. And that raises an excellent question. What is Jefferson about here? Is he a Lockean individualist, a Hutchesonian liberal, or is he a classic civic humanist? And to pose that question is to miss the point. Jefferson is intentionally being ambiguous. He invites different interpretations. He's open. He's pluralistic. He's drawing to, in his language, draw a whole nation together, a nation committed often to different principles. How can you do that if you're too precise? The only way to achieve that is to ascend to a higher level of discourse, which is exactly what Jefferson does. These are the principles, vague perhaps, but nonetheless important, on which Jefferson can forge for us a national identity, which is important. Unlike other nations, America is not unified by one common culture or one common ethnicity. We can only be unified in documents like the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And it's Jefferson's skill at being Catholic, with a little C in his tastes, which allows everyone to read in the Declaration of Independence the important principles that inform their own convictions.